Welcome to FYI, the four-year innovation podcast. This show offers an intellectual discussion on technologically enabled disruption, because investing in innovation starts with understanding it. To learn more, visit arc-invest.com.
ARK Invest is a registered investment advisor focused on investing in disruptive innovation. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. It does not constitute, either explicitly or implicitly, any provision of services or products by ARK. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK or podcast guests and are not endorsements or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Clients of ARK Investment Management may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of For Your Innovation, a podcast by ARK Invest on all things related to disruptive innovation. I'm Andrew Kim, an analyst covering consumer internet and fintech, joined by Nick Gruss, Associate Portfolio Manager. Today, we have the great privilege of speaking with Glenn Coates, VP of Product at Shopify. Hi, Glenn. Really great to have you on the podcast today.
Nice to meet you guys. Thanks for having me here.
Can you first introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us about your journey from Handshake to rising through the ranks at Shopify?
Yeah, our HR controls are relatively poor, which has allowed me to rise to the top of the organization. Someday they'll do a retro on how this actually happened. I ran a startup in New York for about 10 years that was, the summary would be sort of a wholesale-only version of Shopify. So it was digital commerce, but really focused on wholesale. We were acquired into Shopify in 2019 with the immediate goal of like making Shopify great at B2B. Obviously, its roots are in D2C. I spent the first year of my time at Shopify basically focused on B2B. I was kind of moved into this emergency code red thing in the first year of the pandemic called Code Red Checkout, where I was tasked with really fixing a few kind of glaring holes in our checkout for about a year, which went relatively well. For my sins, I was put in charge of what you could think of as Shopify Core. So that's the what the outside world thinks of as Shopify the product. So the online store, the checkout, the back office admin where merchants manage their business, the developer platform, the app store, and that stuff. And then the other part of our product portfolio is merchant services, which is kind of the paid add-ons of Shopify, the payments, Shopify payments, Shopify shipping, Shopify capital, those kind of things. Yeah, and I've actually just crossed my 5-year Shopiversary about a month ago, which is pretty cool.
Congratulations.
I didn't get a cake. I felt pretty robbed. I thought I would get cake and streamers and, you know, balloons would drop, but I just came to work and kept working on e-commerce.
That's amazing. And as you know, we are publishing this podcast in tandem with the summer 2024 rundown of Shopify Editions. Anything you'd like to preview now as we anticipate, I'm sure, the hundreds, if not thousands of features and upgrades that will be announced on June 24th?
Yeah, not thousands, but definitely in the hundreds. But it's a great addition. I'm really proud of it. And the theme of this edition is unified, which I really love, partly because, and I'll kind of give more detail on some of the features in a second, but I think most people who work in software, everyone gets into software with, I think, like the best intentions of building like a high quality product. We've all got like the products that we use in our personal lives or we've even used at work that we really look up to as like those iconic, super high quality, you know, top shelf, timeless products. And I think the reality of working in technology is that most people often are faced with the hard reality of there's the trade-off between hitting numbers, meeting customer expectations, you know, going toe-to-toe with a competitor, something that always puts the quality of the product in that trade-off zone. And one of the great privileges of working at Shopify that I've really enjoyed over the past 5 years is because Shopify is doing so well as a business, because the culture of quality is so strong from the top, it has been a great privilege to be able to take that time to polish and really dial in the product and deliver something of like extremely high quality that I think everyone has in their head when they start working on a product, but it doesn't always happen that way. And the reason the theme is unified is because as products become very, very large, like when you think about like big business software platforms, big technology platforms, as the thing becomes larger, it becomes both more important and more difficult to make sure that all the parts of that thing continue to work well together, right? Like the most, I think the most like common consumer example of this would be like the Apple ecosystem of like, my watch works perfectly with my phone, with my iPad, with my AirPods, with my yada, yada, yada. It all fits together perfectly. It takes a lot of effort to do that. And that is a big thrust of what we're doing right now at Shopify, is really dialing in that unification, because Shopify does so many things for its customers now. It's not just about the website. It's about point of sale. It's about D2C and B2B. It's about selling domestic and global. It's about selling both on your website and in social and marketplaces. And we cover all these bases, but the sort of hidden risk in a platform that gets broad like that is like, what if those pieces stop working well together? And so that's what we're just really focused on, is making that whole thing come together in a really beautiful way. The headline of the edition that I would just kind of, there's so many features in the edition that are on this theme of like making things work really beautifully together. The headline is a new feature called Markets. And Markets has actually existed in Shopify for a little while. There's a thing in settings today called Markets, which is where you manage like your regional expansion, like settings for a different country. Like I'm going to have different prices in France to like the UK, something like that. But we've actually elevated the concept of Markets into the main left nav. And we've actually made it this kind of central command center for how you take your business into all different kinds of markets. So it's not just about regions, like how do I expand my business into France or, you know, the UK or Australia. It's also about how do I expand my business into B2B? How do I expand my business into retail and control different settings for each of my retail stores? And this is a very subtle thing, but this is where the complexity of expanding a business really kind of grinds a business to a halt, right? Because you might say like, hey, we're doing great online. Let's expand into point of sale in stores as an example, right? And you're like, great, we're going to make some more revenue when we go into these stores. But in the process of doing this, we take on all this additional complexity of like, right, but now we have to like launch more stores and deal with all this extra configuration of like, how do we actually configure these stores? And so what we've done with Markets is made a single screen in Shopify where you can control all of these settings from one place. And it's almost like a cheat sheet for looking at my business. And I can see how my business is configured differently for wholesale versus retail versus online, and just control and see it all in one place. And that's kind of a nerdy thing, but the so what of that is that it means that like as you scale your business, you can scale your business into new channels and new markets without scaling your costs, right? And that's the hidden thing that kills businesses, right? It's like, yeah, I'm scaling my revenue, but guess what? If your costs are scaling in line with revenue, like who cares, right? And this is the thing that delivers on that promise of you can grow top line without growing costs. And then that upside is the gap in between. And that's the kind of holy land for these business owners. And that's what we're really trying to bring to the table. So that's why, I mean, there's so many things in this edition I'm really excited about, but this one is one of those. I've seen so many businesses over the years grow really big and you think they're doing really well. And then you peek under the covers and you find out like, oh, this business is actually a nightmare to run. And it's not doing as well as it looks like from the outside. And it's really cool to be able to help with that.
Glenn, you mentioned a bit there just at the end of how, you know, a product like Market comes to be. But I'm just curious, and as you think about unification across the landscape, and this is maybe more for the product manager audience listening to this, how do you think overall about prioritizing which products, you know, get pushed out to market, given how large the platform and everything that Shopify is doing today?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, is like I've been guilty so many times in my career, like more times than I would, I am proud to admit, of not always doing the budgeting and the planning for what it's going to take to really kind of eat your vegetables and do this kind of unification work, right? Because usually when a product team sits down and they say, hey, we're going to build new feature X, they don't always do all the planning for like, hey, remember, new feature X has to work with the existing 10 features. And what's all the extra work we're going to have to do to make all of that connective tissue so that it looks like feature X was conceived as part of this product from the very beginning, right? Like you can often see this in like big software products is you can see what the initial feature set was because that part really works beautifully together as one thing. And then you can see when they started adding new features that seem like extra appendages that appeared after the fact and they just don't quite connect in the same way. And it doesn't, when you look at the product, you don't really know why, except if you can actually trace back the history of the company. You're like, oh, I know why now. It's because that was a team who thought their only job was to build feature X and not to actually think about the whole product. And so to answer your question directly, like there's a sliding scale here, right? If you add a new feature to a platform, not all integrations are created equally, right? Like it doesn't, it's not going to be evenly distributed that that new feature needs to work with all the existing 100 features equally. So you do have to be slightly rational about it and make sure you're still prioritizing, okay, where are we really going to emphasize the integration work and where can it afford to come a little bit later? But I guess I've just learned over the years that I don't know if I've ever met someone whose bias was to do too much integration work. I've met lots of people, including myself, whose bias is to do too little. And I think it's just something I've learned having spent a long time in the world of business software and e-commerce is you just have to correct for that bias a little bit and remember, like, I'm probably doing less than I should. Let me just go back and check what cracks I am letting form that I'm going to really regret 6 months from now. So I think it's just one of those things you learn the hard way over time, you know?
Going back to the integration work that you've done with markets, I guess one kind of question I have without having any idea what the dashboard looks like is that, you know, cross-border and POS, for example, are like two very different strategies, right? With like, well, they're both expansion, right? But they all have different settings, all these different tools. My question is like, how are you thinking about kind of consolidating it into a single view when these initiatives might appear to be so different at first glance?
So these different expansion strategies do have some things that are different about them, but they often have more in common than you would think, right? So it's like really common that you might want to do different publishing and pricing of your product catalog based on the market that you're going into, right? There might be a product that's exclusive in store that's not available online. But then the same concept applies, like there might be a product that's exclusive in like France that's not available in the UK. And so having those common, like the particular one I'm talking about right now is called catalogs in Shopify. So having that as a common primitive that you can kind of plug in and wire in to the markets in a consistent way, that also helps merchants, right, not have to learn multiple concepts when they're trying to like juggle how to expand my business. If they can see that repeating pattern of like, oh, I get it. There's this catalog thing that I use every time I want to like vary the pricing and publishing. But then there's other things that don't apply to every channel, right? So customizing your theme, your online store theme does apply to, say, wholesale and regions, but it doesn't apply to the point of sale because there's no website. You're in the store, right? And this is also one of the things that Shopify tries to do well is present things in the same way, but really give clear guidance about which things are common, which things are different. And I mean, it's hard to do on a podcast because I have to do this thing where I like wave my hand around and like point to things that aren't there. But you can imagine the view of like, it's like a tree, right? It's the graph of your business, right? Like which things nest under one another. So let's take an example like retail, right? So you might have we're going to show you how your retail strategy breaks down. So you're going to have like things that might be common to all of retail, right? Like, hey, this product is not available retail anywhere. But nested under that might be like regional retail. Like, okay, so the way I sell in New York is not the same as I sell in Kansas. And then you might have very specific small stores like, hey, New York City, Fifth Avenue flagship, some very special stuff goes on there. And you'll be able to see that tree breaking down and how things get more specific and more detailed as you go down. But then you're also going to be able to see it like it's done by region. So you might have a different part of the tree that's breaking your business down by region. That's like, okay, US versus Canada versus the UK. And as you walk your way down through the regions, you'll eventually find those retail stores buried in there because that's part of that strategy. And this is like the crazy thing about how businesses actually work is like, can you imagine like showing up to a new business, like as a new employee, right? And they've got all this stuff set up. And then you're like, how the hell does this business even work? Right? Like you'd show up there and you'd be like, hang on a minute, why do those guys pay that price? That's super weird. And like most people have to like walk around the office and be like, hey, does anyone know why this thing is set up this way? And then you'd have to eventually go find a Bill in the broom closet who like is the only guy who really understands why, and he'll eventually tell you why. And this screen literally is like the cheat codes for the business. It's like, oh, I can see why the business works this way, and it's all laid out there for me in black and white. And then of course you get like, you know, reporting drives from that, right? I can report on all of those breakdowns and understand like what's happening in my business at every grain. And so again, this just comes back to that thing of like, how do we help businesses scale in a way where they get to grow without their complexity and costs kind of like dragging them down and kind of burying them? But yeah, as you can tell, I'm very, very excited about this feature.
I guess going back to all the different early opportunities that Shopify is scaling today, right, across all the things that are being consolidated under markets, but also, you know, Shop Pay, campaigns, et cetera. Do you have a favorite product launch or any product that you led in recent memory and how, maybe if you can tie it back to the core philosophies that you've discussed, that'd be great.
I think there's one that's happening right now that, I mean, I'm really proud of what we've managed to do with Shop and Shop Pay in particular. I think helping small businesses offer the same great one-click checkout experience that, you know, the world's biggest internet companies offer is such a big deal these days. I mean, you guys must know, like, I mean, how impatient, like, have you guys gone through a checkout recently that like wasn't one click? It's like literally fucking infuriating. Like
as a user, Shop Pay is incredible. So thank you. Yeah. Thank you for the work there. I mean, it truly, like even the Shop app is something that I use probably on a weekly basis just to be able to track, understand my shopping behavior across the web where you don't have, you know, the closed garden or walled garden as Amazon and Walmart would have it.
Right, exactly. And I think that's, I mean, this is a thing that there's like a, I'm not a very frameworky PM guy, but there's a PM framework called the Kano model. And one of the things, the main thing about the Kano model is it's a really good way of discovering like what features are actually worth building versus just seem cool to build. But one of the other things about that model is like the decay. There's a thing called Kano decay, which is basically like features go from being like nice to have initially, and then they become like should have, and then they become must have. It's kind of like Apple CarPlay is a good example. Like 10 years ago, you'd be like, oh my God, this car's got CarPlay. That's so cool. And then you would buy a car and you'd be like, yeah, it's got CarPlay. That's pretty good. And then if you get in a car now that doesn't have CarPlay, you're like, what? Why am I even here? Like, get me out of this thing. Like, how dare you? Right. And I think Shop Pay is like one-click checkout is one of those things on the internet, right? It was like so cool. And then it was like, okay, you know, and now it's like infuriating when it's not there. That said, there's a thing going on at the moment. I think one of the cool things about Shopify, especially something that I've witnessed over the last 5 years as Shopify has gone from being kind of like low-key winning e-commerce to like, what's the opposite of low-key? Like high-key, like very obviously we
probably high-key e-commerce. Yeah.
um, you know, we're at now, I think, what is it, 10, 11% of all US e-commerce. And one of the things that's happened, and this is obviously what makes Shop Pay so successful, is just being at scale and like the amount of volume and data coming through Shopify is tremendous at this point. And one of the things that we are now realizing and we are working really hard on, and I'm really excited about, is we are trying to get better at improving the structure of the data that is inside Shopify, right? A really good example is, and this is something that's, I think, in the addition and rolling out progressively now, is we've done all this work to improve the product taxonomy of Shopify, right? So that's the product categories and the attributes that go with the product categories for everything in Shopify. And for a long time, this basically didn't exist, right? So you could have the exact same shoe, like two stores could be selling Nike AF1s. They might name them slightly differently. They would tag them slightly differently. And it would be the same product, but there'd be literally no structured, standardized data that would say these are the same thing and they belong in the same category. And here are the attributes for a standardized color, standardized size, you know, all the things, the standardized material, things like that you would expect. And so we're rolling out much, much better standardization around products right now, along with AI that helps people correctly classify, because that's a lot of work, right? Like you creating a product, then you have to put in all these attributes, huge pain in the ass, except if we can do all the work for you, because we have ML models that can basically detect most of this stuff off the top of your descriptions and your images. And that's really, really great because it helps, you know, the experience on your own storefront gets better, right? Like the search and filtering experience and discovery experience on your own storefront benefits immensely from having better attributes to filter on. It's going to help people when their products go out to Google, Facebook, eBay, Amazon, all these different marketplaces to have these attributes set correctly so they can be discovered better as well. But the real thing here is, you know, Shopify is in aggregate the world's best database of the products that people want, right? It's all the products that people actually want, and the order volume for those products is flowing through Shopify. And again, this is one of those things of like, how do we take Shopify's scale and put it back into the product for the benefit of your average merchant, you know? And we're such in the early, this is one of those things where Shopify kind of realized its own might a little bit late, right? Because we think of ourselves as a platform, not so much as an aggregator. But, you know, there's early signs of this in the product today, right? We have audiences, which is, you know, how do we invite merchants into these kind of co-ops where they can like pull data and use that to improve their ad economics. There's things like benchmarks in our reports where you can see, okay, compared to similar stores selling similar products in a similar geography, you know, here's the P25, P50, P75 of conversion rates and AOV and things like that. And it lets merchants really see how they're doing. They're like, oh my God, I had no idea that I'm below P50 for my market. Like maybe my pricing needs to change. You know, like thanks for telling me, you know. And I think we're in the early days of this stuff, but it's such a cool opportunity to take the data scale of Shopify and put it back into the product for the benefit of merchants. And obviously all the stuff with LLMs and AI is making that even more high leverage, you know, over the last 1, 2, 3 years.
I think it's so interesting to hear you describe this because I wrongly or rightly refer to Shopify internally with in conversations with Andrew as business as a service. And what you're describing in the data advantages and scale you have allow you to create products for merchants. And, you know, this was kind of the onset of the internet and what it allowed and SaaS, what it allows, where you can have the entrepreneur focus on what they want to and sell what they want to, where the platform provides all of this other important data and services to allow you to really focus on what you're good at as an entrepreneur. So it's so interesting to hear you describe it in that way. It's just a fascinating story.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, one of the interesting things as we started rolling out Sidekick, our AI assistant, Copilot to merchants in the last month or two. I think there's a few thousand of them now using it. And one of the things where the interesting things we're seeing in the live conversations that people are having with Sidekick is that software people always think of productivity, right? We're such UI nerds. And we're like, oh, people are going to want to use Sidekick to help it create a discount or create a product or create a report or whatever. We always overestimate people's like familiarity with the product and how functional they're getting. And what we actually see in some of these conversations is people who are just like looking for advice, looking for help. They're like, I'm running this business on my own. I don't have a co-founder to talk to. And they're just like looking for advice. They're like, are my prices right? Should I get into this new category? Or even weird things like we saw one the other day that was like some orders came through that I think there was like a payment issue where the payments had been authorized but not captured or something. And they literally asked the question like, should I ship these orders? Like, are these okay to ship? What do I do here? And it's just, again, having that data advantage of being able to take like the collective wisdom of entrepreneurs, being able to take the collective wisdom of all these commerce businesses, all the hard lessons learned by one person, that we don't want necessarily everyone to have to learn the hard way. How can we take that scale? And yeah, when people are in these moments of like, man, I don't know what to do. And like bringing that help to bear using the scale we have. And of course there's all the privacy stuff that we're super careful with and need to figure out around this, but it's just such an exciting opportunity to be able to bring that to bear to people who are just like, I just need some help,
When merchants are asking those types of questions to Sidekick, like would it be pulling live data from benchmarks as well?
I mean, this is the thing. We've been pretty conservative with Sidekick to begin with. Obviously, with all of the privacy concerns, we're both really conservative with the data it has access to. So like today, Sidekick cannot actually touch your store. Like it cannot like save, right? It can help set up things for you and it can say, hey, you wanted to create a discount. Like here's the page with the discount in it. But like the user has to click save themselves because we want the human in the loop to make sure that they really understand what's happening in their business. Over time, like figuring out where the sweet spot is, because it's not just about like what are the privacy concerns and what is the data architecture, but it's also about what's the comfort level of the user, right? Like how much do I trust this thing and how much am I like, I think there's some scale of like where automation goes and it's like, are you giving me advice? Are you giving me the thing, but I have to click save? Are you clicking save for me, but I'm watching you? Are you clicking save in the background and I don't even see you clicking save? So these are all like levels of comfort that we have to kind of figure out. And we're playing very conservative right now of like, let's just get people comfortable with the idea that this thing exists at all. And then I'm sure, I mean, this is going to be a consumer habit thing, right? Like everyone's even just learning how to use ChatGPT. And like, how much do they trust that thing? Like, I mean, you guys must use it all the time. And you're probably even developing intuitions for, when is it hallucinating? Like, when do I need to fact check this thing versus like, when am I pretty sure it's telling the truth? And I think we're all kind of figuring this out and like learning this consumer habit at the moment. So I think this will all settle down and net out over the next couple of years. But I still think we're in that figuring out where people's comfort zones stage,
Yeah, there's probably a lot of things you can borrow, or maybe not borrow, but like, I guess, learn from Apple's demo right yesterday in that very explicit with respect to the UI, right? So I would imagine that like early use of LLMs in the next couple of years is going to look very much like, like open banking, like Plaid authorizations, right? Where like you have to authorize everything, which I think makes sense.
The Apple lawyers were very like, we want the OpenAI logo here and here and here and here.
Right.
Definitely not us.
right. With disclosures everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Before we pivot to, I guess, AI's impact on the consumer. I just have one last question on the on one of the things you talked about on the product attribute cleanup that you discussed earlier. Longer term, how do you see it impacting Shopify Collective, if at all?
Yeah, I mean, well, anything that touches products is going to benefit from better data, right? And Collective's a two-sided marketplace. It's about matching, demand to supply within the network. And obviously, when we control both sides of that transaction, we're in a unique position to offer better data resolution than the alternative. Yeah, I think we're still in the early stages with Collective, but I think it's actually not just with Collective. I would say like with Collective and even with partners like Fair, I think the better the data gets, the more you're able to do that plumbing through from like consumer demand to like supply, whether it's like immediate or like one hop removed. And I'm really excited about like, how do we pair these people together who don't know about each other by matching up data? You can say like, okay, you're selling this type of thing on your store. It's doing really well. These categories and these attributes are performing really well. You know, what in Collective or what in Fair could, you know, double down on that? And then there's even the question of compliments, right? It's like, okay, well, what can we see from our data or from benchmarks that logical complements to this would be, okay, can we find, recommend things in Collective that would be the next, you know, vertical, the next category that you might logically go into? But again, all of that's much easier to do when you have good data about what these products actually are versus just like strings everywhere of like Nike AF1 or, you know, whatever, you know, it just gets better with better data.
Yeah, I guess what I was pointing to was like, maybe, you know, you have the 75th percentile of merchants selling AF1s at a certain margin. And maybe one merchant is selling it at a super low margin. So maybe it makes more sense economically to go the Collective route, you know, and you just kind of recommend that instead of.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's, it's hard to get, like, we have to be very careful of getting into the like race to the bottom, like arbitrage economics type stuff with Shopify. I think one of the great things that I love about Shopify is like you could see a world where like there's literally a button in Sidekick that says like, make me money. Like, can you just do it all for me? Like, click the money button, right? And one, the problem with that is like if everyone has the same button, then like no one has the button, right? But the other thing is like, you know, and I think we're all learning this a little bit, like humans like doing stuff. Like humans like having their hand on the wheel, right? Like it's fun to drive like an old like stick manual car, even though like Tesla Autopilot, like kind of cool, but like fucking boring, dude. Like it's like fun to drive cars. It's fun to like play the piano. It's fun to like make stuff on a website, you know? And I think that's a line that we want to work, because we care about the internet not just being like a good place to make money, but like we want the internet to be interesting and cool and fun and weird. And like, you know, that's something we care about too. So this kind of like super arbitragey, like, you know, price optimization stuff, sometimes we look at that and we're like, you know what? Maybe not. Like maybe it's better if people just figure that out and they have a bit more hand on the wheel and like weird stuff happens and people will make mistakes and some stuff won't work and that's fine. They'll try again, you know?
Given that framing and, you know, having human in the loop, how do you think, and we've touched on AI a bit here, but let's dive down the rabbit hole completely. How do you think of Shopify's approach to AI? How are you rolling it out holistically? What are your plans as a company to introduce this over the longer term?
Well, like, let's start with some like assumptions about like what is going to be true, right? Like, I think base models are just going to keep getting better. Like base models are going to get way, way, way more powerful. They're going to get better in terms of like overall like quality of output. Latency is going to come way down. Cost is going to come way down. And in particular, the ability to, I mean, I think even the early results people are seeing on like fine tunes of Llama 3 are already like really, really, really encouraging and crazy. Like, you know, seeing Llama 3 beat out models that cost like 100x per, you know, token of inference, you know, it's really crazy, like the sort of exponential factors that we're already seeing. I think there's a few things here. One is how do we deploy AI in a way that really does feel like I don't think the role of AI at Shopify is like necessarily best thought of as like the automaton who can just click the buttons for you a little bit faster. I think the role of like the advisor, the sidekick, the co-founder, someone who can help you think through problems is something that we really believe in and I think has a lot of legs. And by the way, I think it's what LLMs are good at, right? Like LLMs are not amazing at like super precise, exact tasks. They're good at like open-ended free thinking type things where there's not necessarily one right answer. I mean, going back to what you were talking about a second ago with the Apple demo, right? Like what was striking about that demo? Like fine, they did some like text generation stuff. They did some image generation stuff. Cool, right? Everyone's been on Midjourney. Everyone's been on GPT. Everyone's seen that shit before. So what was actually interesting about that demo was like how deeply it was integrated into the OS, right? It was like, okay, the Apple AI LLM thing was able to query the apps on device for local private data. It was able to join the dots. And I think that was the, you know, you saw it in some of those demos they did where they're like, oh, I'm going to be late for lunch. Well, how do you know there's a lunch? Well, I searched messages and then I figured out where the thing was and I went into maps and I figured out what the traffic was. And so that framework of making the individual parts of a platform, whether they're the core, like the built-ins, like messages and mail, or it's like third-party apps, how do you make the building blocks of the platform AI accessible? Right? Like how do they declare what their capabilities and data are in a way that if you are the OS and if you have the capability to securely make these things available, you can put an agent in the center of all of that and say, okay, well, now we've described to you what the capabilities of each of this part of the platform are in a way that you can understand. And now you can join the dots in a way to make the sum greater than the, what is it? The whole is greater than the sum of the parts, where you can join the dots between these parts of the platform to string together, you know, super powerful workflows or outcomes that are bigger than any one of those individual parts, which is again where this kind of comes back to the thing of like Shopify is now a bigger product, right? Like we do all these different things online, in person, international, B2B, all these different things. And we have this massive app ecosystem. We have the richest app ecosystem in commerce. And if that set of features, both core and app, can become addressable by AI, then you get into the place where, okay, now the dots can be joined at the OS level, which is something only like Apple can do on their hardware and only we can do on our servers in a way that creates disproportionately powerful outcomes in a way that is not really possible with the same degree of leverage in smaller point solutions, right? Like if you have that AI sitting in just your email marketing tool, or just your WMS, it's not going to join as many dots as in the thing that's running your whole business and can understand the whole picture, which brings us all the way back to markets, which is a really cool feature. I suggest you try, check it out.
Absolutely. One other question just on this topic. How do you think about it from the consumer angle? As in, let's say maybe App Intentions takes off and it's, you know, integrated deeply, not just within Apple's first party apps, but also third party apps. And Siri can query and search across different marketplaces. How do you think about Shopify's positioning when the consumer maybe has a digital assistant that's going out into marketplaces and looking, price matching, understanding where maybe the best merchandise is?
Yeah, I guess I'd give two answers here, both totally different rabbit holes. Like one of them is coming back to like the kind of enrichment of the product data, structured data. You know, today, I mean, you mentioned Nicholas using the shop app. Today, you know, the one place where you can go to search across all of Shopify is inside the shop app. And it's not all of Shopify, it's the subset of Shopify that's been published onto shop, but it's a good chunk of it. I think what's going to happen in the future is that whether it's Perplexity or ChatGPT or Bing or Google or whatever, all of these search engines are going to become more and more data hungry. And the thing that Shopify has that no one else has is the proprietary data of like what's in stock, what is the actual price right now, what is actually available. If you choose these delivery methods, does it change what's available? What can you pick up in store? All of that's in Shopify. I think there's a really exciting future where our infrastructure for exposing that and making it searchable and discoverable to these third-party services is going to become really, really, really powerful because we have the best data set on the planet of the products that you actually want to buy. And so, you know, that will show up in the shop app. That's our first party place where that shows up. But, you know, is that the thing that like Perplexity might talk to or these different agents might be talking to? And how do we make that the best version of that on the planet so that, again, the benefits of that all accrue back to Shopify merchants, right? Like if I'm a Shopify merchant and I'm like, my products are the easiest to discover for the consumer AI agents that are people using to help them find products online, that's only going to help me. I think there's also an additional super interesting angle here around how much chat and voice is going to become the UI for a business versus the website, right? And like, I mean, I'm saying that as like someone who, you know, leads a company where 80, 85% of the GMV is coming literally through websites. But, you know, to what extent, you know, in the future, am I going to go to allbirds.com or am I going to open my phone and, you know, open a chat with like Allbirds bot in WhatsApp or Messenger or Apple Business Chat inside of Messages or wherever that's going to happen? What is that UI going to be? And again, that's a place where because Shopify has the data, we're in this really unique position to host and support agents that want to be able to give those good answers. I think we're all used to the sort of like, you know, American Airlines bot that like, you know, check your reservation and everything. And I think most people have had pretty bad experiences with that. But I suspect that as more and more people get used to using ChatGPT and Perplexity versus Google and like old search, I think people's habits are going to shift naturally towards like conversation and chat as the UI versus like, let me go to Google and crawl through 10 websites and like I'll go read all the sites and then I'll figure out the answer. And so I think there's a very exciting thing there. Like, you know, we've had, what's the history of retail? It's like, okay, the original UI is my brick and mortar store. And then the UI expanded to, okay, well, it's that and my website. And then it was like, okay, it's that and my website and my Instagram profile and my Amazon page. And it's like, okay, is the new extra UI that you have to care about your agent that talks to your customers and that's how they want to talk to you? And so, yeah, I mean, Shopify does all of those things and it's going to be really cool to expand into that next one as well.
Totally.
I'd imagine like what's happening with brick and mortar, right? Like you're seeing a lot more like concept stores pop up, right? Like where it's largely a branding exercise and it's still critical to the brand, right? So maybe the digital storefront as well, it just becomes like a sick landing page. And then maybe you just have a speak to it thing and then they start showing you the product catalog after you start speaking.
And I think this is one of those things where you have to be careful of like where the asymptote is really going. It's like when mobile came along, everyone's like, oh, mobile's going to totally kill desktop. It didn't. It's like 60-40. Like mobile's really important, but like desktop's still super important, right? And so I think this is just one of those things, like we all get a little bit starry-eyed when the next new thing comes along. And I think the truth has turned out to be that, like, the one truth which seems to be enduring is you have to meet your customers where they are. And so customers are everywhere. They're on the web, they're on mobile, they're in person at your brick and mortar store. They might be on your chatbot tomorrow. And the key is to be your best self in all of those places. Like, that's what the best brands do. And so, yeah.
Switch to old Reddit. It's like, you know, that'll never go away. I think that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, again, on the consumer angle, you talked about, of course, like the logistical data that you have, right, with respect to inventory, et cetera. That's critical, of course, for e-commerce. But just speaking from like a pure curation or like styling point of view, like I have like friends who are trying to build, you know, your personal stylist, right, across websites or maybe for like a specific website in like a white label fashion. Like, what do you think, like, is all you need the image and the product description for something like that? Or are there other attributes that you are thinking of outside of the logistical ones that really do matter?
Like inventory and shipping?
Yeah, outside of that. Like, just on like styling, right? Or like preference modeling.
That's a good question. I have to confess, I'm like one of the least social media savvy people ever. Like, I'm not on TikTok. I'm barely on Instagram. Like, influencers are totally weird to me. Like, now I'm like admitting my like old guy status. But I imagine a lot of like what this kind of curation, I imagine it's not enough to just like take the image. I think you have to put your own top spin on it in terms of like, you know, whatever the video of you using the thing or, you know, why you're excited about it. Like the content that the curators supply on top of the baseline, I think is probably to a large extent critical to how successful they are as curators. Unless you're like already like enormous, unless you're like Kanye, and then you can be like, hey, I like this thing and everyone will buy it. But that's not true for most curators, I would imagine. So no, my guess is it is not enough to just have the baseline assets. You have to, as a curator, be generating your own content on top of that in order to like add value. Otherwise, like, what are you doing? You know, I don't know if that's the question that you were really asking, Andrew, but.
I guess maybe like a tangential follow-up on top of that answer is that like one thing that I'm seeing across like Gen Z is like the importance of aesthetics, whatever that means, right? It's like this collection of goods across verticals that like stand for something, right? And it's like no longer are people like looking for specific genres of clothes, let's say, but they're looking for an entire idea. And I think it's really interesting that Shopify has goods across categories, right? It's not just apparel, yeah, let's say. And CPG is like super tied into whatever lifestyle some influencer is trying to promote. So I mean, I guess that wasn't really a question, but I think it is interesting that like you guys have that visibility into being able to tie, let's say, like natural wine with summer dresses, you know, and like somehow they're ancillary to each other and can maybe like convert consumers more easily, you know?
Yeah. I can never find a good natural wine to go with my summer dress, Andrew. It really hurts me every year. Maybe Shopify can solve that for me.
Yeah, I think Shopify will at some point.
Maybe a question here for you, just in terms of Gen Z and thinking about future platforms that may facilitate commerce. We, you know, Andrew and I cover all of the digital consumer space, and one area is online video gaming. And we've seen some of these UGC platforms like Roblox begin to introduce commerce. How do you think Shopify can help facilitate that? What do you think about virtual worlds and even just digital assets, not crypto? We don't need to get into crypto, just more digital in nature, like facilitating commerce. How do you think about that and how it will play a role in the future?
No, I think most commerce-ish platforms kind of split the world into the usual split is like physical, digital, and then services. tends to be the way the world breaks down. And obviously Shopify's home turf is in physical, like that's our bread and butter. That'd be whatever, 99% of our GMV probably. The thing that's been really interesting for me over the past couple of years has been noticing that, like, as we've built out different parts of the platform, almost unintentionally, Shopify has become better and better and better at supporting digital goods in addition to physical. And I also think that, like, I don't know if Shopify is the world's best platform right now if you are selling purely digital goods. But I think what's happening is, like, you know, and I mean, again, I will resist the temptation to get dragged into the crypto swamp. But
yeah, we don't need to go there.
But like more and more brands are kind of are doing a bit of each, right? So like if you're a digital brand who, you know, if you're a, you know, musician and you start out with, you know, I'm selling my album online, but then eventually I, you know, whatever, I have my, you know, my branded set of drumsticks or whatever it is. Or you can go the other way, right? It's like, you know, you start out as in physical goods and then eventually you launch your first NFT. Whichever direction you come from, I think it's going to be more and more and more common that brands are doing both. And so, again, this just comes back to, you know, it is super valuable to have a platform that can help you do both in one place from like one thing and not have to go buy different bits of software and then stitch them together and then complexity, yada, 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 brain damage. And the weird thing about digital is like it's actually the easier problem. This is the crazy thing. Like sometimes I go around internally and I find all the PMs and I'm like, hey guys, can someone explain to me again why when like, are we good at digital yet? Because it seems like we should be. It seems like it's the easier problem. You don't have to deal with inventory. There's no shipping. There's no like, are we good? And they're like, actually, we're pretty good. We just don't talk about it that much. You know, and I'm like, oh, interesting. Maybe we should talk about it. And so that's been a really cool thing. And I think as brands have pushed more into like doing both, Shopify has pushed into doing both. But I think this is something that we will spend, you know, more time on in the next couple of years to kind of dial that in, both from a product perspective and also from just like making sure people know that we can do it, you know, which I think we were probably a little bit quiet about.
Glenn, before our final question, we want to thank you again for your time. This was an amazing conversation and I want to wish you good luck on the stage at Editions on June 24th, I believe.
That's right, in Toronto.
In Toronto. I guess our last question is, it's the year 2034. How are you buying a t-shirt?
Oh, how am I buying a t-shirt? Well, I probably just imagine it and it just like synthesizes out of my Vision Pro and just falls down on my body. Maybe a digital prints out of my Vision Pro down onto my body. I honestly don't know. I actually think the honest answer, so like the real honest answer is like, I don't know if I'm, one of the things that I value the most about working with Toby is that I think Toby sees the future of the internet better than almost anyone that I've ever met. He's like just like a native person to the internet. One of the things that I think is happening right now is, you know, we're entering a new age of software. You know, it's not just how software is written. Like LLMs are going to write a lot of software in the coming years, but it's also how software is experienced as the user, you know, declarative interfaces versus traditional imperative interfaces. I'm actually not, I know it's going to be different. I don't exactly know how, and I don't want to like bullshit and pretend that I'm like one of these, like I see the future podcast, you know, people. But what I do know for sure is that the best way that Shopify and like these kind of market leading platforms can be ready for this future in which many, many, many things will get very different and weird is to make sure that you have your house in order of how unified, how simplified, how easy to work with is your product and your code base so that like when the weirdness shows up, and you have to pivot, you're actually in a position to pivot. Because this is how, like, you know, like legacy enterprise software companies die. It's not that there's no smart people there. It's that, like, when the future shows up, they're like, oh, I guess we need to do this, but I can't because I have to turn this like crazy, like streamliner thing that I just can't turn it fast enough. And so, yeah, I think part of why, I mean, bringing it back to the addition, I'm excited about the unification work that we're doing right now because I just think it makes the product better. It makes it so much simpler. And it makes it like just work in all the way that the customers would expect. But the subtext value of doing that work is that we're making our platform as nimble and as flexible as possible so that when the future shows up over the next few years, we're going to be able to react in the way that our customers expect, right? The thing that customers want from Shopify is keep me on the cutting edge of the internet. I'm just this person trying to like sell some candles. I don't even know what LLMs are. But like you, Shopify, you know what LLMs are, and you're going to help me stay right there on the cutting edge so that I have a chance. I got a shot. And so, yeah, I'm just really excited about getting Shopify unified so that we're ready for whatever comes next.
That's a great conclusion. Thank you again, Glenn.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Glenn.
Arc believes that the information presented is accurate and was obtained from sources that Arc believes to be reliable. However, Arc does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information, and such information may be subject to change without notice from Arc. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in this podcast may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARC's current views and assumptions, and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements.